I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
On today's podcast, my guests are the Total Reboot lads, Cameron James and Alexi Toliopoulos, talking about their new YouTube series, Finding Yeezus. My name is Justin Hamilton, and I'm going to suggest they look for Yeezus underneath the lounge on Big Squid. Hello and welcome to the podcast. This is a great catch up with Cam and Alexi. Their new series is fantastic and you should really check it out when you have the chance. It's really worth it. It's very funny and those two are incredibly watchable. And you know, just watch it for the opening credits. We talk a little bit about that in the chat, so I won't get ahead of myself, but it is fantastic. Before we get into the podcast, a quick reminder that if you're living in Sydney, my solo show Little Victories is appearing at the Comedy Store this Friday, the 28th of October. If you'd like to come along, my listeners score a discount on all tickets purchased. Just head to comedy.com.au, click on the link to my show and use the promo code podcast and you will save yourself some coin. This is my first solo show in Sydney since pre-lockdown. So it's only been 28 years and I'm quite excited to get back on stage and share with you some of the stuff that's been rattling around in my noggin. There's a lot on this week, but I'll swing by at the end to let you know how the rest of this week will play out and what you can expect to hear next week as well. In the meantime, let's bring in Cam and Alexi.
The most important question I've ever going to ask both of you. And I hope this doesn't cause a riff.
Okay.
Is it Cam and Alexi or Alexi and Cam?
I always go Cam and Alexi.
I mix it up.
Because for me, and every one of our podcasts is always Cameron and Alexi in that order because his name way easier to Google and easier to spell. And so that's why I've always put it first because I'm like, that's the way to find us.
Right.
It's easier.
Right.
The order field does the rest.
He's also ashamed of his Greek heritage. That's why. Right. He's trying to hide his Greek heritage as much as possible.
Goodness.
So it disappears when you're scrolling on iTunes. It just comes up at the end.
You can probably tell from hanging out with Alexi and knowing him that he's actually quite ashamed of being Greek.
Yeah.
And he doesn't bring it up much.
It's interesting because when he does question everything, he always asks, can you introduce me as Alex Thompson?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't get it.
Yeah. I thought I want to be known as Alex Thompson. I've never thought what my Anglo name would be. That's
what it would be, I guess.
Wow.
Alex Thompson.
I like it.
What would my Greek name be?
Dimitropoulos.
Wow.
Cam, I don't know. I don't think we have Cam in Greek.
Yeah, no need for it.
Probably Cinnamon or something to call you.
Cinnamon.
Cinnamon Dimitropoulos.
When I was in my 1970s Philadelphia Sound era, I did go by Cinnamon Jones.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I got very excited on the chase the other day because two of the contestants got knocked out and the two that were left were Tom and Joan. I was like, oh, I now have my RuPaul name, Tom Joan. There we go. Very exciting.
That is unusual,
my favorite
actually.
Welshman. Yes, he's Welsh, isn't he?
He is.
Yeah, he is, famously.
Him and Catherine Zeta-Jones.
And he also never talks about it. He never brings it up.
Yeah, I'm Welsh. Mad for consonants, he is.
Yeah, loves him.
Always known him. Mm. So we haven't had an opportunity to talk about your new show. There's people overseas who would like to explain it best and most succinctly.
Succinctly, I'll take the reins on that.
Yep. We can't let Alex Thompson do this.
If we're going to get... Normally, I would defer to Alexi to do this, but if we're going for succinct...
Yes. You know what we can do. Let's do succinct and then let Alexi go.
I'll just listen. I'll listen in for this episode.
No, like let Cam be the baseline. You come in with the melody. Like, we'll do it that way.
Alexi and I are comedians, but more importantly, I would describe us as documentarians and investigative journalists.
Wow.
We have three series of us exploring bizarre mysteries that exist out there in the world. Season one, Finding Drago, is what, Alexi?
It's about me finding this weird book out there in the world based on Rocky IV's villain, Ivan Drago, written by an elusive author who is presumed missing, dead. Then I find a copy of the book, brand new, signed by him. We have to find out who did it.
Season two, Finding Desperado, is what, Alexi?
It's about Cameron James finding an elusive man out there in the world who we believe had a fraudulent Guinness Book of World Records record for world's youngest filmmaker for making a movie back in the 70s when he was what? 9? 12?
Something
13?
Like that. 12, yeah, I think.
A preteen?
Yeah, preteen, when he was a tween.
A tween, if you will. Yes. He was betwixt a child and betwixt a teenager.
Which is something that I've never been, trust me.
And then our new one, Cameron, is what?
Oh, wow, this is a nice mix-up. Finding Yeezus. Alexi and Cameron discover a video game called Kanye Quest that exists on the internet. The rumor is that it is a front and a recruitment tool for a new age cult who are using the video game to lure in new members. Mm-hmm. And Alexi and Cameron go on a mission to try and find out who the creator is.
And the most exciting part, this is no longer a podcast. Yep. This is a visual feast for your eyes
4K.
To munch upon.
It's on 4K.
It's 4K.
And it is 4K. Like, the opening credits are the most outrageous thing I've ever seen. I was told that you had done something, but I didn't know what it was. And then I'm watching it and I'm like going, well, there goes the budget right there. It's great.
You're right, though. You're right. So Will told you about it first, right?
Will said you have to see the opening credits. And I said, oh, okay, great. And then you're watching it and it's like, is this a $90 million episode? Like, what is happening?
Did we tell you how much that cost?
No.
We don't know. I don't think we can say exactly how much we spent on it, but the company Splice Boys, they make these.
Yep.
They own a bullet time camera rig, which is what the Matrix, you know, uses to get all that bullet time effects shit.
That's a crazy sentence just there.
Yeah.
They own a bullet time rig.
Yeah.
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 It sounds like some asshole at the gym talking himself up too much. Right.
I've got a bullet time rig.
Yeah. Look, how do you train to get that? Bullet time rig is basically like 50 cameras in a semicircle.
Well, the real one's 100, I think. Yeah. Like, you can pay more and you get 100 in a full circle, but first of all, they didn't even offer us that.
Yes, no.
They were like, yeah, no, you can't afford that.
You can have three cameras.
They gave us the 50 camera setup. And I think normally it's, you know, between 30 and 40K.
Perhaps more.
Perhaps even more. But because of Auntie Donna, because they were fans of Auntie Donna, and because Auntie Donna agreed to film some stuff on it, we got it for like... obscenely small amount.
Very generous.
Yeah. And it was like the best day ever.
Yeah, it was so
we had
fun.
So much fun.
Yeah.
So normally to hire something like that, it would be like paying for like a 10-show run at the Melbourne Comedy Festival.
Totally.
So
it would have been, it was, because I mean, the total budget we had for this thing was About 100K.
Right.
And so it would have been almost 50% of the...
Yeah.
Of our
and a lot of favours. And a lot of favours in that.
Okay, you know? Well, we don't need to get into that. but, you know, however you pay it is your business.
Yeah.
And I respect it. I have to point that out as well.
Well, I got to tell you, as soon as we figured out that we had this sweet-ass deal on it, we thought, well, this is going to up... Everyone will think we had $1 million to make this thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the rest of it is pretty modest. The rest,
most of it's shot in one room.
Right. No, it's great. It feels like it's a choice. It's like the anthology series Inside Number 9. And you go, they've made a choice here. This is good.
It wasn't a choice. I'll tell you that.
No, don't be like that. Let's not, I'll edit that out. Of course, I won't edit that out. But, but it's great. I'm curious. So when I don't actually know how you guys met. And how long did it take before you both realized you get into mysteries?
Shit.
I actually do remember when we first met. It would have just been at an open mic. The Record Crate in Glebe no longer exists.
Run by a really weird dude.
Sorry, when you say no longer exists, you mean the Record Crate or the Glebe?
Glebe's changed,
Glebe,
man.
Glebe has changed, man. That is true. It has changed. But yeah, there was an open mic there that...
Run by a weird dude?
Was the open mic was run by normal dudes. The Record Crate was run by
open
a weird
mic was
dude.
Run by Dan Muggleton.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
But the Record Crate venue was this guy who used to be in a band in Sydney. Mm. The band failed. Then he opened up a record store. No one was buying records from him. Then he half turned it into a cafe venue.
Right. Yep.
And no one wanted to go there. And he was just pissed off all the time.
Yep.
And he would let you know about it.
Always.
Oh, yeah. So you're performing there and you've brought friends or whatever. Yeah. And he'd be like, no one's coming to my fucking Record Crate cafe. It's bullshit.
Right.
You bloody comedians are always sitting around, blah, blah, blah.
It's like, we're having 100 beers though, mate.
Yeah, we're putting money in your till.
Yeah.
There's nothing better than
someone... And I buy records.
Exactly. Yeah. I buy records. Every time I would MC there, get the $50, goes right back to him, buy two records or something.
Yeah, there's nothing better than someone being furious that you've turned up.
Yeah.
It's like you guys coming here today. What are you doing here?
Yeah.
Exactly. I MC'd the show and I bought the Last Waltz, like deluxe edition, vintage freaking record set, or like 3 or 4 LPs.
Yeah.
Mm. And then it was like $60 or $70. I MC'd and he was like, that's $20. Cause it was like, I had to pay extra for what I'd like performed for like 3-4 hours that night.
Yeah.
And I still had to pay extra to get it.
Great record though.
Great record. Worth it. Honestly,
good,
was worth
good $20.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So I shoot. Yeah. We would have met there.
Like slowly became friends because we like, you know, liked each other's comedy. We were like, found each other very funny, but then we'd be like, probably got close cause we started a podcast with Henry Stone.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Henry Stone wanted to make a podcast about movies and he asked both of us to be on it. And then he quit within a year.
Yeah.
and we just kept doing it.
And we stuck together.
Yeah, that's great. The what was your first mystery that you got into, Alexi?
Well, the first one that I attempted to solve was Finding Drago. But I don't know what, like, I think I always loved mystery stuff. Because when I was a kid, I loved The Famous Five.
Yeah.
I loved Sherlock Holmes. I had a Sherlock Holmes themed 7th birthday party. Like I just always love that stuff, like especially like Columbo. I always grew up watching Columbo and all that stuff.
What was your first Sherlock Holmes experience? Do you know? Because I'm asking specifically because I can remember.
I can tell you, it was Basil the Great Mouse Detective, the Disney movie where it's Sherlock Holmes but a mouse.
That.
Yeah,
I was obsessed. That with
I loved Basil.
That is. Hang on. What about you, Cam?
Sherlock?
Yeah.
I guess the Hounds of Baskerville. That was him, right? Yeah. Mm.
This is so funny because you've just, you know, brought up really delightful things. And mine was Murder by Decree, where Sherlock Holmes going after Jack the Ripper. Mm. And it's Christopher Plummer.
Yeah.
And James
wow.
Mason as...
hey, great cast.
That's great.
Cracking cast. Yeah. And it delved into that and the mystery. And it's one that Alan Moore went into in From Hell.
From Hell.
Which is goes all the way up to the Queen.
Yeah, which, I mean, I don't believe any of that stuff. When I was younger, I used to be obsessed with that whole mythology of it's actually the Queen or it's potentially the surgeon or...
Yeah, and William Gull.
Yeah, all people say, well, actually, he moved to America and he became the Zodiac Killer. Or whatever. Right. Like, there's always some weird...
He was really old, too.
Wow. I'm like, you know what? Awesome. I reckon he was just... it was maybe even 3 or 4 completely disconnected people that were just psychos.
Yeah. But, you know, it's... and it's not like the Queen ever... in any iteration, ever had someone murdered who was causing trouble for the royal family. So
they're very honourable people.
They're very, very honourable. So what about you, Cam? Because you're also, I know you have a love of music. Did you ever have any... were you one of those kids who, when they were listening to an album, trying to decipher what was going on with it, like the backstories?
My dad is, I think we talked about this last time, my dad's really into prog rock.
Yes.
And so one of the first things that I ever remember learning is that the Pink Floyd album, Dark Side of the Moon, lines up with The Wizard of Oz. So that sort of conspiratorial, urban legend-y stuff has been baked into my existence. Mm. And Beatles backmasking was a thing.
Course.
My mum always telling me you can actually hear backwards messages on these records.
And also so the fun that Lennon had with lyrics of deliberately doing things to make people go, I wonder what this means.
Yeah, what's he saying there? And paranormal stuff I was really into. Yeah, right. I loved The X-Files.
Yes.
And that got me into, I've told Alexi about this as well, there was this subscription magazine called The X Factor.
Yes.
Which was all paranormal stuff. So, you know, the Roswell incident and Bigfoot and whatnot. And I subscribed to that when I was a child.
Yeah.
And I would hunt UFOs. I'd go stay out at night in my backyard or go into the bush with my friends and try to find UFOs or whatever. We'd always be looking for creatures in the bush.
Yeah.
That was my childhood, basically.
Oh, I'm sure I love it's the same. Yeah. I'm sure it's the same for every generation, but I think for us when we were kids, there were a lot of those books as well that were like scholastic books that were always like a thousand different mysteries of the world.
I've
like,
still got a couple of them in my parents' house.
I have found one the other day. It's like all those like Stonehenge, those kind of things. Like I love druids and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So it's all those kind of like mysteries in there where they'd only be like a paragraph each or something.
Yeah. But
I always just found those things. I think it's like for us, there's a curiosity in the richer history of like a realm that might not exist, you know, that kind of stuff. Of like,
just outside your line of sight.
Just while I think of it, did you see the news with Roger Waters this week where he did an interview and he said, I don't know how the Wizard of Oz thing happened. We never did that. Oh, it happens, it happens by accident. And he'd heard a story about a bus driving down in America and was kind of all over the road and the cops pulled it over. And when the doors opened, this big ball of like, green clouds came out and everyone was super high inside, and they went down to the back and pulled the curtains back, and there was Willie Nelson watching The Wizard of Oz listening to Pink Floyd.
Wow.
And Roger Waters said, I don't know if that story is true, but I choose to believe
that. I've never actually synced it up, but there are YouTube syncs.
I have done it. I did it with Gatesy from Tripod.
Wow.
And you know, the thing that takes you by surprise is that the album ends and the movie keeps going. And, and for some reason that took us by a surprise. Like, I thought this album like must go for like 2 hours.
It's
like, no, 40 minute finishes album. And then it's just, you know, whoever had synced it, then the rest of The Wizard of Oz was just really quiet. There was nothing going on. Are there any kind of, so conspiracies like this happens in every iteration of the mainstream, and the things that are cool, they get absorbed and become awful. And to be into conspiracies now is a bummer.
Yeah,
because,
absolutely.
Because back then it was on the fringes and it was, you know, highfalutin ideas. Mm. Yeah, are there any that you kind of still vaguely subscribe to and that you kind of still have a love for? So to give you an example, for me, I always like the idea that this is not the first time the world has built up.
You know, I love all that stuff.
You know, that if you go further back, if you dig further down, it's like ancient, there's a whole lot of shit there.
I love all that stuff.
Like ancient aliens, I think that's like so
fascinating. Quite like that.
Chariots of the gods and stuff.
That's why I keep giving Prometheus a go every 18 months, hoping you know, like,
and that's why I love Prometheus
on paper. I love it too, but I never really enjoy it when I watch it. But
it's like I can watch 3 minutes here and 2 minutes there. Like if I watch a 17-minute version of it, it's work of genius.
I'm a sucker for that stuff. I love an ancient aliens story. I don't know if I 100% believe it, but I love it as a bit of storytelling. Mm. But the ones that I reckon I can get easily swayed into believing are anything surrounding the JFK assassination.
Oh, yeah, right.
anytime I read a lot of these sort of books, or if I watch Oliver Stone's JFK, right. which I do.
Yeah. You watch it quite
bizarrely
often.
Bizarrely regularly. It's a yeah. long movie.
I reckon you watch it twice a year.
Maybe.
From whenever you report back to me.
Yeah. Maybe.
And also, you don't watch any other Oliver Stone movies. It's just that's the one.
I don't like his other movies. Yeah, great. I can go like, oh, yep, this all lines up for me. Even though I'm not entirely tracking what's happening.
Right.
There's enough confident people saying, and then this administration did this, and then the Cuba freedom fighters did this, and I go, yep, cool, yep, I believe it, and the mafia were involved too, ancient aliens,
all of it, like
and Kubrick.
I've got to be honest, if you get Kevin Costner to tell me anything, I'm probably going to buy
it. I buy it,
yeah.
Oh, the Kubrick one's a good one too, the moon landing.
I love that Kubrick moon landing one. I don't buy it. I don't think I believe many conspiracy theories.
I just decided then. Just decided.
I've been wavering for a long time, but now this is the time.
I think it's a fun idea to think about that they faked it and then they did real missions after that.
Right.
Well, I think the first one was fake.
There's so much of this stuff that, like, the fiction is richer than the truth. And that's what's more exciting. And I think, you know, especially now with conspiracy theories, a lot of the ones that get the mainstream attention are either the ones that are so out there, it's difficult to believe, but people do.
Right.
Or it's the ones that explain something that, in a way that maybe comforts you more. Like, you know, especially around COVID and stuff, there were so many conspiracy theories that were just like, oh, the lab leak stuff and all that. And it's like, it gives people comfort to believe it's that rather than that something can just happen. You know?
Yeah. It's better to think that it is something that has deliberately happened and gotten out of control, because with that way of thinking, it could get back in
control.
I like that Cashman said that on Question Everything last season. He said something like, I'm much happier believing that this was a deliberate attack rather than just some bat flew into somewhere and ate a pangolin.
Yeah.
Because that means that we're not in charge of anything. If some animal can almost take down the entire
A bat
human
took
race.
A shit on a dim sim and now we're fine. That's too much to deal with. Yeah. Right? It's too much. Yeah. Just getting back to the moon landing thing, did you ever watch, I'm sure you would have, Capricorn 1?
Yeah, I've seen Capricorn 1.
I haven't seen it since
I watched that four times a year. I watched it with my mum probably like this year recently.
Does it hold up? I'm keen to go back to it.
I think it's, in theory, it's much more interesting than it actually is, but it's a cool movie. It's really cool. Great cast.
Yeah. With OJ.
Yeah.
Love OJ.
That's who I'm talking about when I say great cast.
We're OJ truthers.
Yeah.
We think he did it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Man, that's our conspiracy theory. Yeah.
We think OJ's guilty.
Yeah. Have you ever heard...
which bit was it? The book that he released saying, this is how I would have done it if I did it, and it was exactly how he did it?
Have you ever heard Michael Moore's conspiracy theory around OJ?
Who's?
Michael Moore.
Okay.
He has a conspiracy theory around it that it was actually OJ's son that did it.
Oh, fuck. How old was his son?
OJJ.
Three. No. His son was like an adult Sharky. Son, you know.
Yeah. Oh, okay. And what OJ was, and that's why there was all the circumstantial evidence.
Yeah.
Interesting.
All right. So then he released the book to protect his son.
Yeah.
I mean, that's so interesting.
I mean,
really cool.
Yeah, it's Michael Moore. It's like Michael Moore's conspiracy theory. Yeah.
Wow, that's interesting.
It's.
I'd watch that movie.
Yeah.
I would definitely.
He's
got to
make
it.
My dad has the greatest idea anyone's ever had. OJ didn't do it.
It's funny the way that conspiracies have changed, though, because suddenly, you know, when they tried to reboot the X-Files, it doesn't work anymore because, you know, everything kind of starts off on the far left and then it gets moved to the mainstream and then it gets adopted by the far right and everything's ruined. Even in something as simple as grunge, they're wearing denim jackets because it's cold in Seattle, and then, you know, within a couple of years, supermodels are wearing $20,000 denim jackets walking down the catwalk. You know, and conspiracies are tricky. Did you find it difficult to kind of sell it as a concept or an idea, or is this idea in itself, because it's not necessarily aligned with something like that could be absorbed by the mainstream in, you know, like COVID or something that's actually dangerous. Does that kind of still make it fun, or do you get pushback?
I think we're the stuff that we've picked so far to investigate is so divorced from politics that it will never come close to. Maybe this one unintentionally is the most political one that we've done, and that's because Kanye West is involved in it.
And he is in the news since it's been released.
Every week.
Yeah.
Every week.
All the time. And he always will be.
Yeah. He gave us one episode for free and then he popped right back up.
But no, I think, you know, who's to say what will happen in the future? Mm. But for now, that's not really interesting to us.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that stuff already being done really well, you know, like, and I don't want to touch it. But,
oh, yeah. But I kind of also just meant even in the pitching, you know, do people get a little bit, you know, because sometimes people won't listen to minutia.
Mm. Yeah, weirdly not. People, well, when we've had to pitch these things, have just been intrigued by... We sell it more like a true crime parody, I suppose.
Yes.
Yep. Is we go, hey, this is... We're doing true crime without the blood.
Yeah.
Yep.
And everyone's like, great, that's what we want. We want true crime. But really, we're doing conspiratorial documentaries.
Yeah.
And it's like the rabbit hole. That's what we explore. Yeah. It's the rabbit hole. It's the kind of paranoia.
Yeah.
It's the all the president's men, but it's not a president you're trying to oust. It's just like you're finding some weird thing on
some
the internet.
Some elusive
dude.
Exactly. I suddenly want to rewrite all the president's men and have you two act the roles. we'll do a stage adaptation of it. That'd be great.
Yeah. It's kind of that. Like the way that we look at it is like, everything that we're after is insignificant, and usually it's like we kind of find something that is insignificant in the world, but we find like what's special about it, what's interesting about it, and what's worth like celebrating in the story out there that someone might have constructed, you know?
Well, the first two podcasts were such massive hits, and it's kind of fun as well. Like sometimes I'll be talking to friends who aren't mixed up in the comedy world, and they know you guys, and they love those podcasts. Mm. Was this the first idea that you had for your next investigation, or were there other ideas that kind of rose up, and like what's the process?
There were other ideas as well. Yeah, there was one that we looked at even as early back as the second series of the podcast.
It was
another bit of fan fiction. Mm. So the first series obviously largely revolves around this Rocky IV fan fiction.
Yes. Mm.
And for the second series, we thought we might stay in that world.
Yeah.
But then we ended up moving in a different direction. But there's a bit of fan fiction online that's written around the Harry Potter universe. Mm. Some anonymous author rewrote Harry Potter, but from the perspective of one of the bad students, Draco Malfoy.
Right.
And it's quite... It's sexy and...
Yeah, it's borderline erotic.
Borderline erotic fan fiction.
Yeah.
It seems like anytime anyone wants to write some fan fiction, you know it's going to get
sexy.
Yeah,
they go. So I'm rewriting it, and this time they fuck.
And it's also... this was actually quite a big sensation online for a certain age group, certain demographic, because it was also very emo-infused, kind of My Chemical Romance-infused throughout.
So the fan fiction is called My Immortal. Mm. And it's about Draco Malfoy and Draco's girlfriend, who's a stand-in for the author, I guess. And no one knows who the author is, but a few people have claimed to be the author over time.
Right.
Actual novelists have come forward and said, yeah, that was me. I wrote that when I was a teenager.
Yeah.
No one quite knows for sure who's lying, who's telling the truth.
Right.
So we thought that would be a fun area to explore. But then we just went in a different direction. But that one's always been floating around in my head.
Yeah, that one's always there because it's something that's like, especially now, the first two that we made, the podcasts, those are like mysteries that no one else has like ever come across. Mm, they're just like, they were unique to us that we found out there in the world. And I think with this one, you know, there were a few other stories floating around. Like that's kind of, we almost always feel like, oh, maybe we'll do an anthology thing where it's a different thing each episode. But then one bubbles up. We go, this a lot more in here.
Yep.
And I'd say the difference with Finding Jesus is this is one, this Kanye Quest mystery is one that many people have tried to solve over the last nearly decade.
Right.
And I think that was something, for us at least, was a bit of a challenge, an exciting challenge for us to go, what if we try and solve one that and prove ourselves that we are really good detectives and solve one that no one's ever done before?
Mm. And how far into a process do you know that something's going to work, or do you is it right up until the end where you finally get to it and you go, oh yeah, no, that worked? Is there a little bit of anxiety on the way?
Heaps of anxiety.
For everyone listening, there was just a lot of nodding before they responded.
But I would say we decide when we find the hook, like when there's a hook for us, and for us usually it's an emotional reaction, response.
A bit of both, like an emotional hook and also a practical one, like there's more to uncover, or you think you found the floor of it and then you realize there's a hatch in the floor and there's a whole subterranean level. I think for finding Yeezers, the practical hook was we discovered that Mark Bonanno, who was a mutual friend of ours, potentially knew the main suspect that we were hunting. And then
which is crazy.
And then the emotional hook, I guess, was when we started realizing this is a story about faith and belief and the afterlife.
And that was immediately for us was like, oh, that makes sense as what we do next, because our first two are so much about like truth and lies and like why we lie, why we tell the truth, what the meaning is for those to go, well, then what's the extension of that? It's believing. Like, why do you believe in things? And that was like why we're like, oh, okay, this feels like the story we should be telling.
Was that a conscious decision to find a slightly different flavor to this series, or was that just something that came out of putting it together?
It just came out of discovering the story.
Yeah, because you're trying to... There's so many different moving parts. You can't really like pick something that you want to do once you know what it is.
Yeah. If you start saying, hey, we should make this one a little bit more about faith, then suddenly you're forcing it. Right?
Yeah.
You're trying
to make it probably, if we said, let's make a faith thing, we might have looked at Kanye Quest and not been able to see that this is a faith story and just brushed over it.
Yes.
And gone to a more obvious thing. We're doing like Da Vinci Code. Yeah, like we're analyzing like these pictures in the Louvre.
Trying to find
shit.
Out why all these these old statues bleed tears and stuff, you know?
Do you get people pitching ideas to you? Yeah. What have been the
We're on the hunt for it now. Yeah. Like we kind of like have put it at the call out to our listeners and viewers.
Yeah.
We've got like a thing on our website. We can submit a mystery now.
Yeah.
And that's been like really cool. We've gotten some that are so detailed. Like someone wrote one that was had links and it was like three paragraphs or four paragraphs. I was like, man, okay, this guy knows how to sell a story. This might be something for us in the future.
Yeah.
And like, so there's a lot of that. That's I think that's it. We're open to it, you know?
Yeah.
And are there mainstream ideas sent to you? Like,
of course,
the Da Vinci Code?
Yeah, there's heaps of mainstream stuff. And then like things that are sort of not even mysteries, but just like someone said to me, you guys should try and find out whatever happened to Yahoo Sirius, the director, actor,
writer. I think
that's
one that comes up to us a lot.
Yeah, right. A few Yahoo people Sirius. Have suggested it. I'm like, yeah, he's in. We know where he lives. He lives in Avalon.
Yeah.
He's just like up the road.
Yeah.
He's just keep living a quiet life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Showbiz is hard.
Yeah, showbiz is really hard. It's hard to get movies made.
That'd be a good 7-minute episode.
Yeah.
I mean, it could make maybe a portrait documentary around him for a little bit, you know.
I would thoroughly appreciate, you know, 5 episodes of you talking it up, and then the final episode is you knock on his door and he says, how's it going? Oh, yeah, you good? Yeah, I'm pretty good, mate. Everything is quiet. Oh, yeah, okay, thank you.
See you, mate. Yeah. I ran out of ideas after Mr. Accident. Oh, yeah, fair enough.
No, we get it. I think we are doing that at this precise moment as well. Finding Yahoo.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It was, how far? I don't know if you would want to talk about it. But I'm just curious about the machinations of how things come together. And have you had an idea and been exploring it, and then hit a point where you go, "Oh, this is like you're all excited," you know, and then it just hits a cul-de-sac where you go, and then if you do, what's that process like? Because I wonder if, do you hit it at the same time, or is one of you having to say, I'm not feeling this, you know?
Well, I'll tell you, with the Harry Potter one, the My Immortal one, around about season two time, I was convinced for a while this was the one, because there was so much to it and so many, you know, moving parts, a lot of people claiming that they had written this thing. And I got quite deep into it, and I found something that just seemed too emotionally fraught for us to handle at that point. Like, there was a woman had claimed to be the author of it, and she was also had terminal cancer.
Oh, right.
And she was talking about how she had abuse in her family and all this stuff.
Right.
And I just remember hitting that detail and thinking, I don't think we can tell this story.
Yes.
Well, because we'd be giggling through the first four episodes.
Yeah.
And then episode five, we go, and then we just found out that she has cancer. You know,
like,
it would be a bit too weird.
Yeah. It's not the gist. It's like, it's like those very sincere stand-up shows that you see sometimes where you have it, you laugh for three quarters of it, and then someone says, and then my father died. And you go,
And you go, well, I feel bad for laughing now.
Yeah, almost. Now.
I've been laughing in a room with a guy who's got a dead dad.
Yeah.
Anyway, I feel like I've done those shows. That's why I'm allowed to make those criticisms.
Yeah. It's a tough one with that sort of stuff, because it's like, you know, you want... It's almost like if you have a dead dad reveal in your comedy show, I reckon your duty is to say it in the first sentence.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And then go, but I'm not going to make this a sob story or whatever. Let's have a few laughs for a bit, and that'll come back.
Yeah.
That'll be colouring your view of it, but it'll... Yeah. It's a comedy show, and it'll come back to dead dad. Don't worry.
Recently in Adelaide, I had to tell a story about a friend attempting suicide, and it was... He's fine.
Yeah.
But that's exactly how I did it. I opened with,
that's smart.
We're starting dark. Don't worry. He's fine. He's all good.
Yeah.
But this bit's too funny for me not to tell you because, and then blah, 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 blah.
You told me this story.
Yeah. And then you get...
It is really funny.
It is. And then it gets to that point where there's that kind of relief of, because it's, you know, sometimes comedy turns up in the weirdest places.
Yeah.
And that's the point of telling these stories as well. But that sounds like it would have been like a...
Yeah.
Suddenly they're hitting the brakes.
It's one of those things where, if we were to do it now, maybe we could handle it in a pretty smart way or a sensitive way. But this is 3 years ago, or maybe even more.
Yeah. And I would say, like, even the story we did telling for that, the Finding Desperado story, there are some darker turns in it. But I think it took us... having to figure out how to tell those because we were unraveling them.
Yeah.
Now I feel like we could confidently,
with
a little more confidence, not confidently maybe, but maybe do something that's a little bit more, like you said, fraught and like kind of like meld our humor and like our sensitivity with those kind of more sensitive topics and stuff.
Yeah. So who brought this one to the table?
This was Cameron James' one.
Yep.
Yeah.
And where did you come across it to begin with?
Well, a few people had, like we said, had a crack at solving this. So it's just one that I think someone had recommended it ages ago. Oh, do you know about Kanye Quest?
Yeah.
And I didn't. I didn't really care about looking into it. It sounded dumb.
Yeah.
And then I think I just remembered the name, or I saw it on Reddit one day or something and went down a bit of a rabbit hole and realized that a lot of these... YouTubers had come to the same conclusion of who they thought Phoenix was, the person we're looking for.
Yeah.
But I just wasn't convinced by any of the evidence stacked up. I just thought, well, this just feels like there's more to it. They've just hit a wall and gone, that's who it is. End of story.
Yeah.
But they're not investigators. And that's kind of the thing. Like, you can find things out by looking them up. But then the next step is what we do, which is like, actually investigate, find like the factual links, the factual clues. Yeah. And then also the thing that no one else does, which is like actually go out and interview people and meet people, talk to people.
So when you say, for people listening, when you say we actually investigate, what does that entail?
Well, I think it is the same stuff that a lot of people do. Like when they're like everyone listening to this, everyone has fallen down that rabbit hole. Everyone has tumbled down a rabbit hole of like something they've obsessed with on the internet for it could be a short period of time, could be a long period of time, where they go down, find these things, keep going further and further. I think the investigation for us is we connect the dots more and we like kind of find out the things that we kind of find like the factualness in them, like to kind of find like then at multiple points of evidence.
Yeah.
And I think it is reaching out to people. It's like the big, the big step.
Well, it's all the president's man. It's literally the interviews. That's where you find the truth. You
the never, interviews is the truth.
You can tell your own story based around facts or dates or whatever, but it's once you start hearing multiple people tell things that the real story emerges.
And how do you go about getting people to talk to you? Do you find that, especially with this one, do people want to talk about it or do you have to kind of...
So far, people have been pretty good. I think like... I mean, we had a producer this year who really helped us, and she's a documentarian. Her name's Rebecca Metcalf.
Yeah, genius.
And so she's really good at reaching out to people. But it is like, I mean, I do it a lot too. I'd send so many emails that are just like, "Hi, my name is Cameron." Yeah. I never say I'm a comedian. Yeah. I always go, "I'm a journalist," or "I'm a
writer." Is reporter. What I always say. Yeah.
Like,
I'm working on a piece.
Yeah,
I'm
working on a piece about this. We'd really love to talk to you. We'd really love to get your take on this. Yeah. It's just like a bit of seduction.
Yeah. Yes. And please don't look at my Twitter.
I was saying, because I did this the other day. I was on tour. Mm. I was on a comedy tour in regional New South Wales.
Amazing.
And I found, you'd love it, Hamo. You'd love it out there. Can't remember where we were. But
I've probably been there.
Probably, But we stopped at a cafe for lunch and there was all this old memorabilia on the walls of the town.
Yeah.
And there was an old greeting card that said like, it wasn't even for this town. It was for Port Pirie in South Australia.
Oh, yeah.
It was an old greeting card for Port Pirie. It just said greetings from Port Pirie. And there was all this elaborate design around it. And within the design were little swastikas.
Oh.
Kind of like hidden in the design. And we were all looking at it and going like, what is that? Do you reckon that's the Hindu symbol? Yeah. Yes. Or what is it? Anyway, I took a photo of it.
Yes.
And then in the van... when everyone had forgotten about the swastika thing, I emailed a historian from Port Pirie and sent the photo.
Right.
And just said, "Hi, I'm a writer from Thingo. Just curious about what this is." And then I also posted it in the Port Pirie Facebook group and said, "Hey, Hive Mind.
What
just,
the fuck?
Just found this. Wondering if anyone knows what it is. Does anyone have anything similar?" And then the comments were popping off on that with people going, "Oh my God, yeah, well, actually I found something similar," and blah, blah, blah.
Oh.
So it is just like a little bit of seduction, a little bit of curiosity and just asking questions and not being superior.
Yes.
I always plant myself as, "I'm actually coming to you for help. Yeah, exactly. You can help me." Yes. Yeah.
And it's treating like everyone like they're an expert. That's like a big part of it. It's like you go, "Well, we need these expert opinions." We go to experts. We go to people that will know about it and just going like, "We are your servant. Like, we want to hear your expertise on it."
You know, the answer is it was a Hindu thing because it's also used in, it's also, that symbol's also used in like old Celtic Mason sort of things.
Once again, something starts off being fine and the far right ruins it.
Exactly.
But you'll love this too. South Australia was a hotbed for Nazism during the war. Did you know that?
Harndorf.
Yes.
Yeah.
The Germantown.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
My mum, who is 69 and somehow even more of a lefty, was furious about it all the way through my youth.
Yeah. Excellent. It looks like a cute town, though, Harndorf.
It's very nice. Yeah. 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 And the show by Annie Linder on SBS, and I'm drawing a blank on the title. Sorry, Annie, but that's set in that area as well. Right, so there's a lot of, you know... Lederhosen and a lot of sausage eating in the series. And it's very funny.
I love a little German town.
Yeah. That's how fascinating that saying that you're a comedian will open some doors and close others.
Oh, yeah, big time.
And I reckon you are completely right.
Yeah. And it's about like figuring out which one. Like for years or so, a lot more younger people are reaching out to.
Yeah.
I'd say the comedy route opened those doors a lot more than they would have ever done in any of the other mysteries we tried to solve.
Yeah. So from about what, mid-30s on, like then you're a journalist?
Exactly.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Even to other comedians. I reckon if you get in touch with other comedians and you say, oh, you're a comedian, they'll probably turn on you.
But,
but I think we're quite honest that we're comedians once they're locked in for an interview.
Right. Yeah.
Once they agree, we go, okay, cool. By the way, this is sort of a comedy show, so we will be a bit silly, so don't be put off if we're going to be a bit silly.
And then people get into it straight away. Yeah. Like every time we've had an interview, we dream and hope of getting some stick in the mud that we can like mock a little bit.
Mm.
But then they always want to riff with us. They always want to joke with us. They get on our level immediately.
Our big note this year on Yeezus was we want a lot of really dry academics that we can be funny in front of, but every single person ended up getting a really funny line in the show.
Everyone was funny and everyone played on.
Well, you know, I think that's the misconception is that everyone's funny to somebody.
And
the comedian, the skill is to broaden the appeal. So that's all it is. And I'm, how many times have you met someone? You say, oh, you're going to love my new boyfriend, he's funny, and you meet him and you go, Jesus Christ.
He's actually the funniest guy I've ever met in my life.
But he's funny to her.
So
sometimes when people get an opportunity to just like throw a little zing in your way, they're really excited.
That's it's a really true observation. Like that's one thing, maybe that's partly why comedy will never be truly respected, is because everyone is funny.
Because not everyone can sing and not everyone can act and not everyone
But everyone's gotten a laugh.
Yeah.
Everyone.
Everyone.
On the planet has made someone else laugh.
Someone laugh at some point, you know? And even, like, how many times have you been in, like, not necessarily one-on-one, but in a disagreement with someone and a couple of people will take a side and then they'll say something and they'll all be laughing and you're like, that's not funny.
Yeah.
Like, that was a sentence.
Yeah.
What the fuck are you laughing at? Yeah. But to them, that was the greatest thing in the world. That's why I always get frustrated with when people review things and they'll be somewhere where everyone's laughing and they'll say, that's not funny. Mm. And so, no, it's quite clearly funny. It's just not funny for you.
That annoys me too.
And I think I think that's why streaming has ruined comedy for movies, and because people are experiencing it at home.
Alone. And that's interesting.
Sometimes you get caught up with stuff.
Yeah.
I'm interviewing in a couple of days. I'm interviewing Nick Stoller.
Oh,
so
cool.
I went
and
saw his new movie Bros. And there
How
was
is
just
it?
There was just four of us.
Yeah.
And the two guys behind me, like I really enjoyed it and I thought it was really funny.
Yeah.
But I probably got a 10% boost out of it because the guys behind me were making me laugh so hard over how hard they were. And it was, you know, there was just...
It's so infectious.
It's only four people in a cinema, two behind, and I was sitting next to a woman from BuzzFeed and the four of us just had a brilliant time together. But I reckon if I'd watched it at home, I still would have enjoyed it, but it would have been more that, that's funny.
Mm. Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
But...
That's so rare to genuinely laugh out loud at home.
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen very often. It can happen.
Yeah.
And it's usually not at the big laugh points, is it?
It's something weird.
It's usually something odd, like a weird line reading or something.
Yeah. Or scary things make me laugh more at home by myself. When I was watching an Inside Number 9 episode that finished on something that was genuinely creepy, I was here by myself. I went, "Oh!" And that was my biggest laugh in an episode that was pretty funny up until that point.
Yeah.
But, but you know, especially with something like Bros as well, which... depicts a lot of hilarious gay sex. And by myself, I would have been like, God, that's reminding me of a lot of my friends and the stories they've told me. But hearing the guys behind me cackle when something was happening also accentuated the experience. So that's my theory.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm 100% with you on that.
How many more episodes do you have to go for your current series?
Well, there's six in total.
Yeah.
Six episodes in total. Yeah.
I've seen the first two.
Yeah, cool. So the third one is out now, and the fourth one, as of recording, comes out tomorrow.
Yeah.
And the fourth one's our favorite one.
Yeah.
Is it?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, five and six are great, especially, you know, we're not spoiling anything, but we are openly on the record saying that we solved the mystery.
Yeah.
Yes.
And by episode six, you know, it's all put to bed and it's all, you know, wrapped up. But so they're great for that reason because you get conclusion. But
and there's cool stuff in them as well. There's episode a lot of cool four stuff. Is just the one
episode
where like
four is our favorite one.
We achieve the comedy stuff we'd always wanted to do with these kind of things.
Yeah.
With especially going visual, we like got to do stuff that we'd always dreamed of doing, like a lot of juxtaposition stuff.
Right.
That like we can't do in audio.
Yeah.
That just worked so well.
That's great.
Yeah, we saw a set piece in our heads at the very beginning of this, and then we made it. And then when we looked at the edit, we were like, that's exactly how it looked in our heads.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
That's nice.
Like, that's a bizarre feeling. That never happens. You always look at something and go, that's not quite right, but it's still good or whatever. But this was when I looked at it, I went, well, that's it. That's what we wrote down. There it is. And it's fucking exactly what we wanted.
Yeah.
Wow, that's cool.
Really cool.
So episode four is like your one-shot True Detective episode.
I actually would say that. It's pretty close to that.
God, I love that show.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Carcosa, man.
Look, you know, True Detective is... like, I'm keen to go back and... like, I did The Leftovers on this podcast. I'm keen to do True Detective.
All
go
three back, seasons?
No, just the first season.
Man.
I quite enjoyed the third season.
I did it all again. Oh, yeah. I didn't finish season three. Because I remember quite liking two.
Mm.
It's okay.
I want to give it another shot because Justin Lin did the first few episodes, right?
Well, on the second watch, I got to tell you, I did see all the criticisms that everyone had at the time.
So there was something good in every episode.
Mm.
And it just, you know, look, I know this has been reported since, but at the time I was watching it, I'd said to my friend, I feel like it's not cooked properly. I feel like they've taken it out of the oven too soon. And they kind of admitted that. And that's why they took longer making the third season. Mm. And that's why I think the third season holds together much better.
Yeah.
But the second season, you're sitting there and there's a great moment in every episode. And there was, for a while there's scenes where that's feeling quite, you know, David Lynchian.
Yeah,
and,
totally.
And I think Colin Farrell's performance is lost in it. Like, I think he's great. And but, you know, you kind of look and you think, maybe those two characters should have been amalgamated.
Yep.
The initial idea was it was going to be set when it was being put together, it was going to be set in the abandoned underground of LA.
And, love that.
Yeah, and it, like you just see a taste of that in this, and it's...
I like the idea of the industrial suburb, like the or the Vinci it's called in the show. I can't remember what the actual place is called,
but
it is a crime hotbed and it is run by the mafia, this real place. And I love that. I think Vince Vaughn is really cool. And I remember in the last episode of season two, Vince Vaughn's bleeding out and walking through the desert to kind of get back home. And he starts having visions of all the people that he's been responsible for the deaths of around him. And when that was happening, I thought, this is the fucking show.
Yes.
Why did you wait till this episode to do it? It should have all had this stuff in it.
All the way through.
This is what it should have been. A guy grappling with the crimes that he's been doing his entire life.
And maybe not Vince Vaughn.
Yeah. I don't mind him in it. I'm not against Vince Vaughn.
We're Vaughn heads. We love Vince Vaughn.
There are better actors. I'll grant you that.
I think there's not in the world, in history. I think he's number one.
You've decided to buy into the moon landings and you are...
I'm a Vince Vaughn fanatic.
He's a Vaughn head.
Yeah.
The first True Detective to me is an interesting exploration of intellectual and emotional masculinity.
So
and
true.
That's what... Yes. And I think... you know, Michelle Monaghan's character is kind of, you know, people talk about being a very masculine TV series, but I think she's a really interesting character who kind of brings this connection between the two.
And
she's a little bit like the soul of the series, you know, calling things out.
She's great in it.
Yeah, and I'm keen to, and also I just, you know, all of those one-on-one interviews, like that's one of my go-tos on YouTube. Oh, I'm a bit tired. I'm going to put on a little bit of Russ Cole telling me that time is a flat circle. Here we go, baby. This is great.
I love it.
And it's also when you get to the end and you rewatch it, which I have done many times, is you go, oh, he's not rambling. He's wearing them
he's
down
to get his,
because as soon as he gets information, he's like, nah, I'm out.
Yeah, he's filibustering.
Yeah, it's great. So, all right, I should let you go. Before you go, do you have an idea of what the next, well, not, you don't have to tell us, but do you have an idea that you might lean towards, or do you just need to get this done and have some breathing space?
We have a few ideas we're kicking around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And along with that. 13,000-page document that someone has sent to you.
Yeah, which is really good.
Yeah, it sounds great. Yeah.
We just know that we want to make more of this and we want to dive deeper. And
we really like telling stories in this format. Yeah. Like, you know, I think that it's something that we do really well, that we just, I think it's like our composed voice together now. It's just like finding these weird little things and then treating them really serious. I heard this great quote recently that is, drama is people treating things really seriously. Comedy is people treating things really seriously.
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm like, that made so much sense to me and like what we do, which is like something strange. We treat it so seriously.
Yeah.
And that just is like, I think what we want to keep doing forever.
Yeah, it's the best.
Or at least a few years, who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe we'll go to drama after this. Yeah. Try to solve some real crimes.
I really hope so.
But that's so true as well. Like one of the chasers I was working with was a bit frustrated with something. We had a bit of a break and you know how we got back on track? I pulled up half an hour's worth of Frank Drebin clips from Police Squad.
So, yes. You know,
and the way that is played so... Like there's God, that
I
scene,
love Frank Drebin.
Oh man, like it still makes me laugh. Like
I saw you share that tweet.
Oh, bribing each other.
Yeah, isn't it the best?
Yeah. The one where he's talking to the chief and he says to Drebin, "Hey, just got to warn you, this woman's been really messed up." And he says, "Oh, okay." And he walks over and he starts interviewing Quasimodo. and the chief says, no, the next table. And he's, "Oh, yeah, no worries. Sorry, ma'am." And then just moves on to a woman who looks fine. But if you look in the background, through the window is the Eiffel Tower. And like none of it's nothing. Nobody draws attention to it. And it's all played straight. And it's much funnier.
It's so funny.
Can I tell you my favorite part of your dynamic is that you both find each other hilarious and it's really fun to watch. Like, you know, just trying to get Alexi to swear.
Well,
like I could have done 3 episodes of that. Like that. But just the enjoyment of each other is paramount. And you're also quite distinct personalities, but you can see if it was a Venn diagram, you can see where it overlaps. So never lose that.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think that's part of it. Is like we just, there's nothing we value more than the laugh of the other person.
Yeah.
You know,
that's true.
Yeah. Yeah. It always, it works. That should be a constant for every relationship. You know, friends, partners, family, just trying to make them laugh.
It's so true.
Before you go, how about one recommendation for people listening of anything that you are enjoying at the moment? And I know that's a broad question.
First. Okay, good Lord Almighty. Well,
and it can be from any era. It doesn't have to be from now. It whatever you want.
Well, there's 2 things I'm really very into at the moment. One is a TV show, which is Ethan Hawke directed this documentary series about Joan Plowright and Paul Newman and their relationship and their stardom. It's called The Last Movie Stars.
Yes.
And it is like such a good documentary series. And the thing that hooked me, which was like what completely sold it as my favorite thing I've seen this year, was he does this thing that Cameron and I really like, which is really like, how do I'm trying to think of the word, but like the, not recreations, but verbatim theater style stuff where he's got these transcripts that were from original recordings that this biographer did with all of Paul Newman's, like anyone you would want around Paul Newman, his ex-wife, everyone had all, he did all these recordings of interviews and then Newman burned them all because he didn't want this biography being written eventually. But then
the
biographer had gotten all these transcripts done. So Ethan Hawke has gone out and gotten all these great actors to do verbatim recreations of these transcripts that he's directed like over Zoom and stuff because he made it during the lockdowns. And it is like all these great actors interpreting the real words of someone else. And I just love that technique. Yeah. I think it's so beautiful and like awakening history and stuff. And that I just love this series. I think it's like 5 episodes.
Yeah.
And it's really in-depth and really thoughtful. It's as much about Ethan Hawke and his stardom as it is about Paul Newman.
Yeah.
That's really great. The other thing is a movie, a little bit hard to track down in Australia, but it is out there. It's called Inspector Ike. And it is this Brooklyn comedians made this feature film for like such a modest budget. And it's like you guys are talking about. It is like Police Squad. It is like The Naked Gun, where it's like a perfect recreation, homage, parody of Columbo and 1970s era detective telemovie TV shows. And it is just so funny. Beautiful period recreations on like this really tiny budget. Great score and so, so funny. Really, really funny.
That's great.
Yeah.
What about you, Ken?
I'll just say the last thing I watched, which is A Simple Plan, the Sam Raimi movie.
Oh, yes.
From the 90s. I watched it. It's one of those movies that I've known about my entire life.
I'm the same. Never seen it.
Yeah. It was like an Oscar nominee at that era and then disappeared a bit.
I wonder if it's because we all know Fargo.
I think that's probably it.
And it kind of looks like a lesser version of Fargo. Mm.
Right. Yeah, you know what the industry's like. It's like, oh, these two things are mildly similar. We can only enjoy this one.
Yeah, we'll choose the one that won
one becomes an icon.
Yeah. Yeah. But it is similar. It's set in Minnesota in the snow and it's a crime story.
It's a collaborator of the...
Yeah, it's with Raimi, who obviously collaborates with the Coens. But it's fantastic. Bill Paxton, Billy Bob Thornton, Bridget Fonda.
Yeah.
Three great actors. Plus you've got
B's.
Gary Cole as the fourth lead, essentially.
Oh, my gosh.
He's one of those, you know, there's a few actors, actresses out there that you go, oh, I would love him to get some... big mainstream thing where people are going, who's this guy?
Totally. Yeah.
It kind of happened for Richard Jenkins. Remember Richard Jenkins was that guy and then suddenly he was...
You know what I watched the other day, speaking of Richard Jenkins, and this is the other thing I'll recommend, is I've been watching a lot of dumb comedies again lately for the first time in a long time. And I watched Me, Myself, and Irene, which is this Farrelly Brothers Jim Carrey movie, and Richard Jenkins plays one of the cops in it.
Great.
And I was... starstruck by Richard Jenkins.
He's so
funny. I'm already watching a movie with Jim Carrey and there's all these other big actors in it, you know, Robert Foster's in it and stuff. Mm. And then all of a sudden Richard Jenkins comes in as this kind of bad cop and I went, oh, Richard Jenkins.
Richard Jenkins' comedic career is stellar. He's got so many good comedies.
Oh, he's amazing.
Great in all of them.
He's one of the greats, I reckon. Yeah.
The first time I saw Richard Jenkins was in the Al Pacino comeback movie, Sea of Love, because he's the cop that Pacino's wife left him for. And Pacino's having to constantly apologize because he keeps ringing the ex-wife.
Yeah.
Denise. Denise, we've had a bit to drink. You know, so that was the first time I saw Richard Jenkins. So there we go.
He's great. A treasure.
What did I see him in? I saw him in something else again the other day. I see Richard Jenkins almost
Wedding
every day.
Crashes? Is he Wedding Crashes? No, he's Hall Pass.
He is in Hall Pass.
Yeah, he's Hall Pass.
But no, it was that movie with the guy, you know, doesn't matter. I can't remember.
That's great.
I'll go through his entire filmography in The Visit.
All right. Where can people find the series and where can people find you as a duo and individually?
You can find the series at findingyeezus.com. It's also on the YouTube channel Grouse House. But if you just type Finding Yeezus into YouTube, you'll find like all the episodes will be there. And you can find us on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at This Is Alexi. Cameron's at I Am Cameron James on both of those platforms. And we do a podcast together called Total Reboot. And if you like Finding Yeezus, we're doing a recap podcast of each episode going behind the scenes as an after show hosted by a dear friend of ours, David Alat, who may be involved in Finding Drago, the original series that we kicked everything off with.
Yeah,
and
great.
I'll say this, funniest guy on the planet.
Yeah.
Funniest guy on the planet. He's someone, like we were just talking about, not in comedy, and no one makes me laugh harder than him.
Yes, he's so funny.
Yeah. In my fucking apartment, you just said that to me.
Sorry,
anyway,
funniest guy in the world.
Fine, no worries.
And I'll just say that I just remembered the movie. It was The Absolute Power, the Clint Eastwood movie.
Clint Eastwood flick.
That I saw Richard Jenkins in.
Right.
Played an assassin in that.
Oh,
yeah, very
great.
Cool. So anyway, just remembered that while he was talking.
Thank God. Thank God you could remember it.
Which is worth watching, by the way. If anyone hasn't seen Absolute Power, it's very cool.
Yeah, great. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thanks for coming on this podcast. I recommend everyone check it out.
Thank you.
Love you guys. Individually, I love you guys together.
I love you individually and together.
Yeah. Thank you, Cameron James, Alex Thompson. Thank you. Thank you to Cam and Alexi for being my guests this week. Remember to check out their show online and also let me know what you think. Head over to the Big Squid Facebook page and you can leave me some thoughts there. I hope you love it as much as I have loved it so far.
I'll be back on Thursday with an interview with Hollywood director Nick Stoller and a review of his new film Bros. I'm just going to be honest with you. I thought it was really funny. I laughed a lot. So I'm looking forward to sharing that with you. And then I'll be back next week and we will have a new Chitter Chatter on Monday. We will have Mickey D on the show. He hasn't been on for a while, so it's good to catch up with him. And then we will have the brand new Beautiful Tales for the Disenchanted, the short story segment that pops up on this podcast not as often as I would like, but these short stories, between writing them and between Sean Allen's great production, they take a while to come out, but this one is a scorcher. I'm very happy with it. So that will be next Thursday. You know, I love to finish with a quote, and it feels appropriate to finish with a line from Alfred Hitchcock. Give them pleasure, the same pleasure they have when they wake up from a nightmare. Until then.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.